Michael and Sally, Jim Dwight Creek, call Andy and Kelly for your business paper needs. Dunder Mifflin,
the People Person's Paper Podcast.
Dunder Mifflin,
the People Person's Paper Podcast.
Dunder Mifflin,
the People Person's Paper Podcast.
Time out.
Welcome to the People Person's Paper Podcast, the show where we are going episode by episode through every episode of the hit NBC sitcom The Office. My name is Hilton Price. With me every episode is Brian Sittler.
Erin Gobra.
Neither one of us is Irish.
No, I'm just... I guess neither is Andy.
Because of the kilt.
He ain't.
That's
more
Scottish.
I'm more in the Andy camp.
You're more Scottish than Irish.
Yeah.
And you're neither.
I'm just a mutt.
I have no idea if our guest is Irish or Scottish. Josh Boltz, what are you?
Andy Gobra to you gentlemen as well. I think I'm Eastern European.
Okay.
I got some of that.
Yeah, ditto.
Yeah.
All right. Well, Erin, I know there's
Polish in there.
Yeah.
Did we all learn what that means? Just out of respect to our Irish.
Erin go bra? I believe it means Erin go bra.
Bruh.
But here's the thing. We meet Erin's bra in this episode, and he sucks.
Ooh.
He's the worst.
He is the worst. You know, a lot of people give shit to that cameraman in season 9, Brian.
Yeah.
And this guy fucking surpasses that dickhead, I gotta say.
Foster brother Lamo.
Creepy ass.
Cringy foster brother.
But also, my other problem with that, why is the camera crew there?
Yeah.
Why did the camera crew follow Andy to Erin's house?
Yeah.
That's right.
Exactly. Yeah.
That bothered me. I'm like, guys, I mean, I know it's a TV show. It's like, what are you doing? Try to justify it in some way.
One little thing I did notice, I will give it somewhat credit, half credit, if you will. Erin does look awkwardly at the camera.
Yeah.
When it's there.
Yeah, because she's in her pajamas.
Jammy jams.
Yeah.
And he's in his worky works.
Yeah, and also her foster brother, weirdly comfortable coming out of his room.
Oh, yeah.
To a fucking camera crew.
Yeah.
In his living room.
Yeah, that suggests to me that he's been on camera before. Help me, foster brother. Where I'm going with this.
Happens all the time.
Clearly, if the American search results are to be believed. But here's the deal, is we are in episode technically 19 of season 6. I think we lost count, which is not uncommon for us here on the People Person Paper Podcast. We were in episode 19 of season 6, St. Patrick's Day, which is
Ireland
rife
forever.
With problems.
Mm-hmm.
Right.
Because here's the deal. I understand that as you get into later seasons of a popular show, it's time to find new storylines, new angles to approach these plots with your characters.
New holidays to explore.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Here's the deal. We are seeing a St. Patrick's Day episode for the first time on this show that has done Valentine's Day episodes. It has done Thanksgiving episodes. It has done multiple Christmas episodes.
Halloween episodes.
It's even done an Arbor Day episode. Actually, I don't know that that's true. But it has done Halloween episodes.
Should have.
Because of paper. But here's the deal. It's not that they do a St. Patrick's Day episode. It's that they act like St. Patrick's Day is a huge deal at the office.
Yeah.
Yes, and I...
Because we've had 5 previous years where we know nothing about this allegedly big thing at the office.
Okay, yes.
Or that St. Patrick's Day in Scranton itself is...
Evidently,
yeah.
Is. I guess there's... They said this on Office Ladies. I'm pretty sure I got the percentage right. 30%. I guess Scranton is 30% Irish.
Oh,
wow.
So it actually, I think it actually is kind of more of a big deal in Scranton.
Huh.
I mean, clearly that is. That's a big deal because our 3-person podcast can't even be 30% Irish.
Not even close.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Evidently, but I hear you though. It took 6 seasons for this thing to show up.
Yeah. I don't understand. And also,
let's hold that thought. Yeah, so many seasons, and we know nothing about six whole seasons, and we know nothing about the St. Patrick's Day celebrations of Dunder Mifflin. It's never been brought up. For a city with 30% Irish population, why wouldn't it be?
And it's also just an episode that takes place where everybody's working late at the office.
Yeah.
Awkwardly working late.
Well, and that part of the plot, at least, it's a unique take on Michael.
Yeah.
What I like about that is so much of the office plots are Michael has an idea and it leads into the plot. Mm-hmm. This one is Michael has an idea, it is rejected, and that's what leads into the plot.
Yeah, that's true.
It's somewhat classic with Michael wanting to be loved, being appreciated, wanting to get in good with the boss.
Yeah.
Obviously.
Yeah.
Doing it to a he is what the people younger than me would call extra.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Very cringe.
Yeah. A lot of cringe in this episode.
This incarnation is not my favorite Michael.
Yeah.
And
Gen Z would hate this Michael.
Oh, I mean, I'm with him.
Yeah.
But it goes back to that's all he cares about is being liked by her in the end. And I mean, which honestly can feel very patronizing to somebody in her position. So I think she's fully, obviously, well within her rights to shut him down as she does.
Yeah.
But in the end, we'll get to the ending with them. I do love that they come to some understanding.
But, I will say in Michael's
professionally.
I will say in Michael's defense, I mean, you know, whether you're a loser or if you're into bestiality, if you're in with her, if you're in the inner circle,
man, Michael.
I'm so glad he wrote that down. I couldn't write bestiality down.
Yeah, what an interesting take.
Yeah,
you know, just
he does another. Speaking of extras this, not really a lot to write home about.
In the Superfan episode.
They didn't have much. Did they?
There's one. Michael does a previous thing before the inner circle. When he thinks that, you know, she's invited him to stay.
Yeah.
He says something like, she invited me to her house. She wants me to swim in her pool. She wants me to watch her sleep.
That's great. That's not even in the deleted scenes.
Yeah.
So that's great.
The deleted scenes, he thinks he's in the inner circle.
Okay.
The deleted scenes have a bit, though, that I really like that I wish would have been in the episode. And maybe in the super fan tell us is... when Michael and Oscar are talking, and Oscar's trying to explain to him that
yes,
Joe's folksy, friendly nature is not 100%
authentic.
It's
an affectation. Yeah, exactly.
I did read that one.
And there. And the thing is, that should have been, because I was able to watch both the regular cut and the super, just to get a comparison of what was expanded and what wasn't.
Yeah.
And, you know, for the most part, it was just a few extra... you know, lines tacked onto something that was already in the episode.
Yeah.
But what I really thought was the original cut needed that, him talking to Oscar. Cause it really didn't drive home that, she's just being kind of folksy and not very authentic on its own. Like I find her less sympathetic in the original cut, because I'm like, well, you're the one going around being extra nice and saying you gotta play, and there's nothing, and there's nobody there like there is in the extended cut or the
deleted
scene.
To just be like, that's just her personality.
Yeah.
Yeah. But I gotta tell you, at the same time, I feel like the aired version where Michael, where you don't have that context, it really paints Michael as more cartoony.
Yeah.
As just taking everything so face value on Jesus Christ, Michael, it's been 6 years. Do you learn nothing ever? And the writers were fine with that. And honestly, sitcom tropes are fine with that of no growth. You know, that's a old school sitcom thing reset by the end of the episode.
They grow just enough here and there. In other areas, not at all.
Exactly.
Even in reverse. Even.
But what the context gives us is something that we don't always see in The Office when they want to cut to the bare bones plot, which is that Michael is not 100% wrong.
No.
It's that these other people have problems and issues themselves that Michael's wrongness kind of builds off of. And in this case, it's that Joe's style is not 100% authentic.
Right. No.
And that's technically, that is a fault of hers.
Yes, absolutely.
Well, she's also ruining her assistant because he has no life.
Yeah.
So, which we find out later.
But the one of the best Michael scenes in the episode is such a classic lack of self-awareness.
Yes,
the conversation with Gabe, he breaks it down and he says something along the lines of, you know, oh my God, to be in your 20s and single? You know, I figured I'd be married by 30. Michael, you're 45.
Yeah.
So, well, subliminally, how depressed is this man?
Yeah. Well, no, because
he
says something like, he was like, oh God, 26 and married to your desk. If I were in that position, that would be... Yeah, he says something basically like, I would like to have been... He says it in a way where he's not aware that he is talking about himself. He's still talking about
in the idealized way that he would in his own 20s.
I'd like to be married by my 30s.
He has this like realization and is still able to take it positively.
Yes.
Even though deep down he's just crushed.
Yeah, even though he's wild. Way beyond he's, Gabe's problem.
He's still finding a way to be like, oh man, yeah.
Yeah.
That's just horrible.
And I'll tell you though, it's
but her style. Back to her style.
Well, ahead. No, because yeah. That's a thing that we all do. Because I you know, I'm in my 40s. You guys are either
well
there or close.
It.
Yeah,
and
further.
And I'm sure that you guys have, as I have, occasionally had a similar moment. You realize it instantly,
mm-hmm.
but where yeah. you see a thing and you're like, "Oh God, I'd love that one day," and then you're like, "Oh fuck, I am so far past that stage of my life. Yeah. I can't necessarily tack on
right.
that kind of number."
Different situations, different.
But at the same time, it's just important to recognize that, and Michael clearly doesn't. So that is a great scene. But
I would say her style would drive me crazy if she was unpredictable.
All of it.
Like,
all of it.
Thankfully, it was her last night, and this was the episode. I'm glad that they actually they let Kathy Bates loose a little bit, like her character.
Yes.
Like,
yeah.
They'd only been hinting up to like her, you know, intimidation.
Yeah.
I loved watching the dogs. Just as a side note, the whole like that one that was just like just sitting on the couch, just staring.
Oh, out. But it has that weird eye, like where it's the lid. You can see it. It's kind of that's just off putting on its own, like it's Dr. Evil or something.
Yeah, yeah.
Exactly.
Those dogs have to be in a commercial with Dwayne Wade.
Yeah.
Oh, wait a minute. Yeah. Can I just say I really this is one of those. Oh, I hadn't noticed that 100 times. I've seen this.
Yeah.
There's a dog named Joe Jr.
Joe Jr. One of the dogs is Joe Jr. That yep. That's so fantastic.
I can never remember the other one, but I always remember Joe Jr.
Well, Joe Jr. is the hit right
that
there.
The hit.
That's the joke.
I think that's like the what is it? Is it 30 Rock where like Tracy's kids are all named either they're Tracy Jr. or
I think they're all Tracy Jr.
Yeah. It's like George Foreman.
Yeah.
Jr. Yeah, like 10 of them.
Yeah, because in real life George Foreman's got like a bunch of kids named George Foreman.
Yep, yeah. and a daughter named Georgina.
Man, that's
wonderful.
He knows there are other names, right? Has anyone checked?
Hey man, when you've gone toe to toe with Muhammad Ali, you can name your kids whatever the hell you want to. As far as I'm concerned,
for the record, you could always name your kids whatever the hell you want to.
Yeah,
you don't have to go against Ali for that.
No,
I mean, neat if you did.
It helps a little.
Wait, that's not how it is.
Was that the Thrilla in Manila? Was that Foreman
yes.
Ali?
Yes, man. That was.
Either way.
It's either that or it was Frasier.
So I can get married.
Anyway, back to the scrambling in Scranton. So,
did you know Kevin wants to invent a suntan lotion soap?
Oh, the way she shuts him down with it doesn't all have to be inventions. Like, she saw that coming and knew the deflection. That moment, the Daryl scene. The Michael infantilizing Daryl.
Yeah. Oh,
look what you did.
We're going to put that on the refrigerator.
Yeah.
Oh, and amidst this, he's whispering the descriptions of each person that asked her a question.
I like the little little hush now. You know?
Uh-huh.
Hush. Yes, though, because what does he say about Daryl? He's like smarter than
the warehouse.
Smarter than usual.
No, smart for the warehouse.
Smart for the warehouse.
Yeah.
Which really,
his issue with Daryl didn't become uncomfortably racist until later. I was expecting it to come right then, but no. And I was like, oh, maybe he's not. And then a little like a few minutes later, oh, there it is.
It gets ugly eventually. That's way worse than Scott's.
But I love Daryl like with the I need you to go now. I need to learn how to work this tiny TV.
Yes. Yeah. Just okay, you need to go now.
Yeah. That's so good. And the thing about the line of the racist line is it's such a great Michael.
How do I put this delicately?
His racism is so oddly nuanced.
Yes.
You know, like that was like deep racism.
Uh-huh.
Like that took a little bit of explaining if you're not like knowledgeable with American history.
Right.
You know?
Why would they owe them anything?
Exactly.
Yeah.
Like,
oh.
Does her family and your family.
Oh, some past, what was it? Past,
racial injustice.
Yeah.
It's very much like a reparations kind of discussion.
Yeah.
It's,
yes.
He could have said, is this a white guilt thing?
Right? Like that, we were one step away from him bringing up the white guilt.
Yeah.
Man, it's so good on the writers for kind of going a little deeper to bring up that racist comment to, and
put it delicately, I guess, if you want to put it that way.
And it's just such a great example because we know Michael not only loves Daryl, idolizes the man. You know,
right, yeah.
He thinks he's one of the coolest people he knows.
Daryl moving on up.
Yeah.
By the way.
And
yes.
Exactly. which you know what? This hell of a song. Great fucking song, the Jefferson's song. Theme song.
That was
not complaining still about a little bit of that.
To this day.
To the East Side.
I love Gabe. I just put my stuff in there.
Yep.
So I will get it cleared out for
doesn't
you.
Say
yeah,
a
Joe
word.
Just yeah. kind of looks.
The look, and it's so quick.
Yeah.
Like that kind of interaction should have taken more time, where Gabe is like, and her do the stare down. But it's like he knows so clearly.
Yeah.
I mean, you could tell he has been under her boot for a while.
Yes.
Yes. How fun was this episode for her just to glare at people the whole time?
She yeah. uh-huh.
glared at everybody.
Oh, yeah.
Like, multiple times.
Even the end with the, I look forward to that, too. There's a bit of a stare.
Uh-huh.
It's Kathy Bates, you're a fucking treasure.
She's probably... Go ahead.
Well, I'm just like, remember when you were a teenager and you had that boss? It was always like the time to lean, time to clean type person to go like, or do you think you've worked? Well, if you feel like you've worked hard enough to, God, that brought back like traumatic teenage job memories.
Yeah. It's such an interesting thing too, because, and
just
then
tootle on home.
The episode also doesn't paint her as just a taskmaster, you know, because she also talks about her own urge to work and how she didn't get to be the most powerful
woman in Tallahassee
by not working hard and marrying rich.
Yeah, she did both.
Exactly.
Yeah.
But there's the working hard. Like, she considers herself a hard worker and pushes herself even with the. And obviously she's sick of talking to Michael by the second half of the episode.
Oh, yeah.
Yes.
But I also believe that when it's time to chat and it's time to work, she is intent that she's working right now.
Yeah.
Like, and it's easy to sympathize because he is being that annoying.
He is, yeah.
Yeah.
And she gets a great side eye to the camera too. I loved how that, because she asked, you know, how many knocks does it take for you to do some work?
Yeah.
And he's still just smiling like an idiot through the whole thing, like painfully.
Yeah.
And she just nails the camera, like Jim, like even better than Jim.
Yeah,
or more
exactly.
Intense.
Well, and the thing about it, too, is that little bit that he doesn't quite get it, you know?
No.
That he
made how many? He made, go ahead.
It's like she says, how many knocks to get you to do some work? And it's like you can see where he's, oh, we're joking back and forth. I'm smiling. We're having fun. And it's almost like I can see the understanding happening over a few seconds of him really. The dumb shit-eating grin, and in the eyes, it's like, oh, I'm not okay.
Yeah.
You know? It's really great work by the cast. For such an episode that has such lows, and I am 100% talking about Foster Brother,
right?
Uh-huh.
It is such a great episode in other ways.
It's just another tragic part of this whole Andy Aaron thing. That just, because...
What the fuck were they doing?
It is a tender, nice moment at the end.
The kiss on the cheek is super cute.
It is cute, but I mean, and they have some good back and forth, some good banter. He does, but he also does his awkward thing with his legs when he's right up next to her desk.
Yep.
How he kind of like, you can't see it as well because of the skirt or the kilt.
No, it's a skirt. It's his sister's old field hockey skirt.
Yeah.
You know, the creep. He does point that out, even though...
When Joe sends him home, maybe put on some pair of pants.
Thank you. That was the best part.
It was such a nice little subtle dig and a subtle callback to the earlier moments.
And he's walking like a soldier to his car. Like, that man is determined.
Yep.
I was a little like, okay, he's going to go. Yeah, he's doing this.
Man, the Kathy Bates sending Aaron home sick... is the COVID boss we all needed years before the pandemic.
Yeah. I mean, that is the one thing. Hard worker, but not one of those bosses that's like, you know, if you're sick, we want you
home getting better.
Yeah.
Well, you don't want to get everyone else. And like, you know, Andy pulled off the fakie, and like she might have been doing that, though. It was plausible enough.
Yeah. Well, and that's the thing, though, is it's what I saw there was a boss that cared about the productivity of the office.
Absolutely.
Not filling some short-term quota, which is really what you see 90% of the time when you've got these companies that are forcing employees or making them feel manipulatively like they have to work through being sick. Mm-hmm. It's because they're either A, so short-staffed because of past cuts, or B, they have a a short-sighted idea of quick turnaround now versus long-term progress later.
Yeah,
and
that's
right.
That's 100%.
And the pandemic taught a lot of us that we have to go for the latter, because in the end, if you have a situation where a lot of people are sick, the last thing you want to do is risk exposure, which shuts everything down short term.
Yeah.
You get nothing done.
And this is pre people working at home all the time.
Exactly. Yeah. We're talking, this is what, 2010?
Yeah, this is 2010.
I got to say.
September 17th. Oh, it actually did air. Oh, no, I'm sorry. The season started in September 17th of 2009. But yeah, this episode did air in 2010.
Yeah.
And then it was kind of, I got to admit, a little...
Because I know how, well, How I Met Your Mother was still on the air because...
Yeah, exactly.
Because Andy... Yes.
Andy thinks that that's something to aspire to. Years later, we would know that How I Met Your Mother is not something to aspire to in any way.
I know that now, and I'll never watch it.
Oh, man.
See, and that right there is exactly how I feel.
I'm probably losing out on some, but...
Well, yeah, but that's how I feel about Game of Thrones. Like, now that I know that the ending is super disappointing... I'm not going to commit the time.
People still really seem to be into the prequel. I mean, I guess.
Oh,
House of the Dragon.
Yeah.
Well, because at least that hasn't fucked anything up yet.
Right.
You know?
Are these new writers? Or a little tangent?
Yeah. Oh, yeah. It's
they
not
are,
D&D.
So it's,
yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. But yeah, no, that's why I've always been like, nope, not going to do it now. I'm glad I never did.
No.
Honestly.
if you can accept that you won't meet the mother, then the first four seasons of How I Met Your Mother are funny.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And if you just want a fun show with some interesting characters, although, you know, honestly, Doogie is still kind of a creeper, though. So.
Yeah, Barney is definitely. But I will say, though, out of any network sitcom that I've seen, probably the most planned out of any network series, just because there are things that they set up in early seasons that don't pay off until almost the end of the entire, and I'm thinking like,
there's this payoff.
I'm like, man, they were really thinking that they were gonna go the distance that they did to be able to
plot out that. They definitely took good notes to make sure the stuff was set up for later. You know, something that I wish like J.J. Abrams had done better on Lost.
Right.
You know? But How I Met Your Mother, I would say if you can accept, if you're willing to cut it off after like season four, because it becomes a slog.
Gotcha.
But I would say do it. Game of Thrones, do not do it.
Right.
Not worth it.
Right.
It's because, and only because.
You think it'll be good at some point, or it starts out really good, but then it just like.
I also know how it ends.
It just, I do too.
Also seasons five, six, and maybe, well, there's seven or eight seasons in that show. I can't even remember anymore.
Something around there.
Yeah.
But the so 1 through 4 are good seasons on Game of Thrones, just like on How I Met Your Mother.
Yeah.
Correlation.
But I feel like the need to see what happens with Game of Thrones is so much stronger. So I would say no.
Yeah.
Really, if you're going to watch either one, just rewatch The Office.
Yeah.
Exactly.
That's the answer.
And wear your mask.
And listen to us along with your rewatch.
Yeah.
Didn't that hit a little differently seeing Lange put on that mask?
Yeah.
I don't know. Like, I was like, that's a nice mask. I could use one of those.
She put on the mask when she sees Aaron sick.
Oh, yeah. I mean, she's insane, like, over the top. But, I mean.
Well, actually, you know what? I'll make one more interesting mask comment before we, that's off topic a bit, before we jump back into the episode, is I rewatched a 2017 Godzilla movie, Shin Godzilla. Yeah.
Oh, okay.
Because I really enjoyed the most recent Godzilla -1.
I've been seeing similar things on my feed.
Right. So Shin Godzilla, made in 2017, and I noticed in, and of course, we've all learned how Asian countries were stronger adopters of masks during sickness long before the pandemic.
Oh, way before. Right. Back during SARS,
there was big lot of scenes where a lot of people were wearing masks. And I noticed it, and then I remembered when the movie came out. I was like, wow, yeah, it's a good reminder that it's not just some stupid political thing from 2020 America. It's like literally a health thing people have done for ages.
Oh, yeah. Mm-hmm. No, there's constantly, in any crowd shot of anything I've ever seen of Eastern Asian countries, even when times were good, you will definitely see at least a couple people wearing a mask, probably
a
because
time.
They're sick.
Yeah.
First thing I can remember is I would see that in random things in the 90s.
Uh-huh.
And it was just like, okay, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Well,
that's what they do.
Was that Godzilla... Was that the one with Millie Bobby Brown?
No. It was a Toho production.
Okay, it was one of the newer Toho.
It was the previous live action Toho production.
Okay.
From 2017 called Shin Godzilla. Very good. I didn't enjoy the plot as much as Godzilla -1, but it's also very good. And The action is top notch. Oh, really great action. A lot of cool destruction. If you watch your old school see Godzilla destroy Tokyo, you will get your wish.
Mm-hmm.
Just like you'll see cringy scenes destroy the Eren and Andy love story.
Oh, God.
And this is such an interesting place for me because you get scenes like the kiss at the end. There's still the hope. There's still the I want them to work. The sadness on Andy's face when Eren has to go home sick. Mm-hmm. I felt that.
Yeah,
I felt that.
She'll still like him next week, right?
When your date falls, yeah, that because I felt that
his crushing insecurity,
yeah,
coming out.
You know, it's very, very sweet and sad and cute in some ways, but then you just get stuff like the foster brother, top to bottom, is just a weirdly out of left field, oddly intimate. I mean, you know, I made the step family porn joke a few minutes ago, but it has like inappropriate context.
Does.
Yeah.
You know,
I mean, in,
why has he got an arm around it? Why is he rubbing her leg?
Okay. They lived together when they were 10 to 12 and 15 to 18.
And then even Andy with the formative, the writers clearly want us to wonder what is the relationship here?
Right.
Yeah. Well, I mean,
how oblivious is she to this?
Well, and I don't know how similar a foster like sibling relationship would be to a step sibling, because you know you're not. I assume it's got to be different in some. Well, because she said there was that 2 year period where they didn't live
right
together. I mean, it is a weird. They could have just done like, oh, this is my roommate.
Yeah,
you know, they could have just done that instead of like adding in this kind of pseudo creepy, you know, family element.
Yeah,
if you wanna call it that. But right. I mean, it's been God, that was so uncomfortable.
So go ahead.
It's got to be. Do you know anything about the history of that scene? Because part of me wonders: is that that feels like a one of the writers had this experience kind of story?
Yeah,
could have been perhaps, but They do preface it. We learn a little backstory on Eren. Apparently, she was sick from 3 to 6.
Yeah, that's true.
Do we already know that she was in the? Is this when we find out that she was an orphan in a foster home?
Ooh, I don't know where we find out.
Do we already know that? I think we might already.
I think they might have already at least alluded to that.
No, it's not. So Secretary's Day. That's later.
Yeah, still to come.
And she talks about how her hair was her room.
Yeah.
And But I think maybe this. I feel like we might have heard it before, but we're still learning more about her. And I think so if that was already established, I was like, well, she'll just have a guy that she lived with in the foster home, you know, or something.
Yeah.
I don't know. Like, but it's an odd choice to end up, regardless of even the creepiness. The guy steals his chair, his seat.
Yeah.
Yeah. The dude's just a weirdo anyway. You know,
and thinks he's doing him a favor by giving him the best seat in the house.
Well, I don't know. The couple
separated
looks
from Eren.
A couple looks he shot at Andy did kind of lead me to feel like, hey,
it was very territorial.
Yeah.
Well, yeah. There at the end when he's creeping and lurking in the background.
Yep.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Definitely gets that. But Eren has no concept of any of that.
No.
So it's.
That or like, she just doesn't understand the awkwardness of it,
which is kind of
the question about Eren. Eren's self-awareness and Eren's intelligence is always kind of in question.
Absolutely. Well, she's
I think as far as at least, you know, we ask these questions about what is the relation, you know, how brotherly, sisterly is a foster sibling relationship. Well, at least to Eren, it seems to be like an actual brother.
Yeah.
Like, she just thinks they're doing, like, fun brother-sister roughhousing, you know?
Yeah.
And I think the brother, is kind of, you know.
He's a manipulator. She's naive.
Yeah.
Right. Like, there's some predatory.
Wow. Yeah,
overtones in there that are unsettling.
Yeah,
yeah,
or that he's at the very
potentially
least
predatory.
Because I don't think we ever see him again, do we?
No. Know.
Yeah.
I made a note of that. I was like, yeah, no, they didn't. They didn't. They didn't bring him back.
I think
ever.
They were probably like, yeah, you know what? Let's not go down this avenue.
We'll just hold off on Eren's private life for now.
Yeah,
we'll get her together with Gabe. It'll be fine.
Yeah, and that's the thing is this entire relationship, and we will see that through to the next season, is very much one that. They changed course often.
Yeah.
I think they had very differing ideas from day one to the last day over what the Eren and Andy story was going to be.
Mm-hmm.
And I think we're seeing that here.
Mm-hmm.
And I think this may have been a failed attempt to throw more obstacles in their way, but still keep that hope alive, because the obstacles were weird as hell and the hope just wasn't enough.
Yeah, I mean, because all it was is they're trying to make another Jim and Pam. Yeah. And I do
they want to get that hit that tone.
And I do remember from back in 2010 when I was watching this, as was on, I wasn't really invested in their relationship at all.
Right.
I liked
at any point. In fact, it sapped all the goodwill Andy had from being mistreated by Angela, because he definitely became
the
jerk.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Like, eventually it's a
train
wreck.
And that's really, and maybe that's the core of it. And we all know the Hangover story that's tied to that, especially towards the end of his arc as manager.
Yeah. Well, but he was getting the he was the next in the Steve Carell line of, you know, making that jump to more feature films.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. But for whatever reason, it just, maybe because of how he started and where he was going in the early years, they just couldn't figure out the right way to redeem him. Mm-hmm. Maybe it was behind the scenes changes as they went, but for whatever reason, this was not going to be the new Jim and Pam.
No.
Which sucks, because less him, but more her. I like Erin.
Oh yeah. Oh,
love Erin.
Always.
Yeah.
You know?
Hell yeah.
And I wish we could strip away some of this cringy nonsense and get her with somebody good.
Yeah.
I would love that.
She is definitely... Right? Like,
maybe Michael was onto something.
I think he was.
The type of person that Erin is the one of the types of people that I'm very, very attracted to.
Yeah, yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah, and there's a sweetness and a genuineness, and I'll say it again, an authenticity that really shines with her. And even the foolishness, the naivety is often adorable.
Yeah. So
she just rolls with the Erin go bra thing right back to Andy.
Yeah.
It's like a lovely idiot that I love.
Yeah. She's sweet. She's just good nature. Well, that's a synonym for sweet, but she's just, you know,
she's too good for him.
Yeah. That's why I'm glad when she got with
that old lady
with Plop.
yeah, because honestly, yeah, Plop ended up being a good match.
That
for her.
That I actually kind of rooted for.
Yeah, yep, that I
was. I was like, Andy, go away.
Yeah, too bad about Clark. He became a creeper. But
we have the element though of the will they won't they, because Michael's kind of off in no man's land right now. But we're creeping towards his.
His crazy resolution
shit that's going to happen with with Date Mike, coming up. So right now, they're trying to have that in the Andy Erin sphere, and it's just not doing the same.
Yeah,
as you would say,
which probably explains why they shift the romance focus on the show this season from Erin and Andy to Michael and Donna here in a few episodes.
Yeah,
It'll definitely change things around.
It will.
Meanwhile, return of Todd Packer this episode.
One cool quick nitpick.
Yeah, of course. What do you got?
Just a fun little one of my favorite quotes from this episode, because all these episodes have awesome quotes, no matter how good or bad they
there's
are.
There's a lot to love in this one, even for its flaws.
Absolutely. And back to Joe's style that Kevin definitely does not like, because he just because she doesn't have a life doesn't mean he can't have a life.
Yep.
Because Oscar has a life. And he thinks Ryan has a life.
Kevin's perspective is fascinating.
Yes.
First off, obviously, because clearly he does not have a life.
No, he likes looking at other people's lives.
Yeah. But I love that Oscar is the guarantee. Like, he's like, Oscar has a life.
Oh, yeah.
He spends most time with him, so he's the he's the surefire bet.
He knows his Oscar.
He's got it together.
He does.
Ryan, who honestly has some of the most life that we've seen on the show in 6 seasons.
Well, they're making plans to go out on St. Patrick's Day, you know?
Yeah.
Oh, they are. Oh, right.
Yeah.
Because you go out in a group.
Yeah.
Yeah. And he's really offended at Meredith. Why? What about your kids?
And then Kelly with where are your kids?
Yeah, not today.
Not today. That's such a it's really stuff that makes me at least hope that the St. Patrick's Day, some of these ideas have been around for years.
Yes.
Because there's a lot of value here. Like the idea that Meredith loves St. Patrick's Day
is
so cool.
Yeah. You know,
it's such a nice little extra layer
on brand.
Yeah, yeah.
Perfectly 100%. On brand.
It's the perfect day She gets her great shot in the end on in the three way with Packer and Michael.
Yeah.
What is going on? Like the way Michael is really like, what is happening?
Yeah, the way is that felt like he turned back into Steve Carell for
a minute. Yeah, that definitely did.
I was always fixated on their faces, like oh, what the hell, especially Michael and that, and I. This time I finally saw Dwight is coming at them at the very end.
Oh, I didn't notice.
Yeah, I never did either. I was like, oh, there was your meeting that you were talking at Shanny O'Ganigan's or whatever the hell. Like, anyway.
Oh, that little bit between Jim and Dwight. We haven't had a real high quality Megadesk, of
Megadesk. That if there is one thing to take away from this episode, it is Megadesk.
My hot take, but not really take, is this episode should have been called Megadesk.
Yes. Yeah. Because this is
staying
like
late.
This didn't really introduce a lot to the Office, you know, pantheon of jokes or all that, but Megadesk.
Yeah. Yeah, that's. I read the synopsis of this episode last night before I watched it today, and my two biggest surprises were I had completely forgotten that this was Megadesk and that this was the stepbrother or the foster brother.
Yeah. Oh,
because those two things, realizing that those two and St. Patrick's Day
were
all the same episode.
Yeah.
This is a throw shit at the wall and see what sticks episode.
This is, and I was going to say
more
this earlier,
and more common.
This is, we got to get 23, 24. I think there's actually like 25 episodes this season.
Yeah.
I think they count because the delivery and Niagara,
exactly.
They count as
two.
But still, this episode is definitely we got to get 22, 23 in the can.
Yeah.
So
this is the one where they pull in the second whiteboard of all the unused jokes.
Yeah. Where can we throw this in?
Yeah.
Do you remember the one time
can
that he said
cobble
that
something out of all of this?
Like, do you guys remember that one time Greg said his dogs might know something he doesn't about peeing in the snow?
Yeah.
Use it. Like, man, what if Michael doesn't realize he's past 30 and not married? You know?
Yeah. And talks about how he would be really depressed if that were the case.
What would Dwight be doing while Jim's on paternity leave?
Exactly.
Also, he builds a giant desk and he calls it Megadesk.
Also,
rebuilds it twice.
Surveillance, gaming, business.
Yeah.
What a great job that lets you fucking play first-person shooter games on your computer at work. I want that job.
I couldn't tell. Was that a real game that actually existed, or was it just something?
What was the game he was playing?
It looked like some sort of shooter. It almost looked like Quake or something.
It did. It had a very Doom or Quake look to me, but I'm trying to see here.
Maybe an enhanced version for that point.
Yeah, but I couldn't tell if it was just something they made to play or if it was an actual game.
Some generic game that you get rights for. Or you wouldn't have to worry about.
Yeah. Or they just made like a quick animation of something to look like a game.
I found a thread on Reddit where they were debating it, and I cannot find anything that confirms.
Conclusive.
And I do see a screenshot here.
Pretty quick.
Josh, I'm going to have you come around and look. Sittler, you're not as big a gamer, so
I wouldn't know, but I would like to see it,
yeah, come take a look around real quick. But it does not look like anything I recognize. It definitely has stuff that's meant to kind of be evocative of past games. Not only just classic first-person shooter tropes like the gun center screen at the bottom, but a heavy use of red in the motif. You know,
yeah, that doesn't look like anything that I would recognize.
But I believe it is meant to look like your Wolfenstein, Doom, Quake era. First-person shooters, for sure.
You'd be using your office's internet.
Let's also keep in mind, if this is a 2010 episode and you're at work with your surely outdated computers, 1993's Doom might be the best you can get to run.
I remember in high school, back in 2003, 2004, my senior year of high school.
Yeah.
Somebody had installed Quake Arena, the Battle Royale one, on the back end of the school's computer system, and everybody in not just keyboarding class, but graphic design, any class where computers were mainly used, kids were, after they were done with their assignments, everybody knew how to log. And the crazy thing was, is it wasn't just like the gamer, like everybody was, people you'd think wouldn't even
want to play.
It's amazing what getting away from schoolwork will get
exactly,
you doing.
Yeah. Exactly. And yeah, and I remember it got to the point where even the teachers knew about it and they were like, just
whatever.
Just finish. Would you please just finish your thing before you do it, guys? You know?
Oh, yeah.
So, and I just thought that was such an awesome thing that I remember from high school.
It's an awesome way to multitask.
Yeah, and that's the thing is, Megadesk is cool. I thought Megadesk was a cool setup. I would love to have more space to work. You know,
yeah.
Now there's people working now people working with multiple screens is more normal.
Well,
now,
let me ask you though.
Yeah.
Megadesk or Quad Desk?
Which, for the record, when you realize that there is a little space in the hole at the bottom for Dwight, it is.
It is in fact a Quad Desk.
Four desks, exactly.
Yes.
Yeah, one of them just happens to be part of the floor.
Yeah, you get. You get floor desk.
Exactly.
So or basement desk. I forget. It's in the extended version of the outro where.
Oh, that he names it?
Yeah, they come up, they suggest, instead of just saying it's wrong because it's three of them, they actually suggest a few more, like, paradesk.
Oh, man.
So wait.
And then he tells him, like, oh, no, that's yours down there. You have, like, I think it's, like, underground desk or floor desk or something.
And of course, you know, Jim would have plenty of reason to build Quad Desk just for the punishment for Megadesk. But we have the constant pressure from Dwight all episode for Jim to go home and be with his baby, including a soulful rendition of Cats in the Cradle.
Yeah.
Multiple.
Which Dwight
Cats
hates.
In the Cradle and the Silver Spoon.
and then Andy, just going right back. That's
putting me
it.
Back off Andy, actually. I was like, what?
Yeah.
Yeah.
He just can't control himself?
Yeah.
That's at least I did appreciate at least that we got a classic Andy moment of if there's a song,
see,
dumbass Andy's chiming
you
in.
On it. Threw that against the wall. Yeah. And then we'll throw in a rid-did-did-do.
Yeah, he hadn't done that. Hell, they'll even throw in the extended when Creed gets a moment.
Yeah.
Joe goes in and goes, Mr. Bratton, you look like you're well rested. Haven't slept a wink.
Yeah. Nice line from Creed.
Damn it. They should have kept that in.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It was quick. Barely, it was too bad.
You only see Creed in the background. I don't think he has any lines in
not
the original.
Not outside of that.
Nah. Grassroots Zone gets denied this episode.
But.
And you know, and you would think with St. Patrick's Day, you could find more. Like this is rife with things for Creed to be weird.
Not to mention, Dwight gave him a Shamrock keychain 4 seasons ago.
Yeah,
Oscar.
Excuse me.
Yeah,
thank you.
Yeah, it's all good.
He said, I don't know about Creed.
But
is
back to your point.
Yeah.
Yeah. I think he's Irish.
Yep. Yeah. they could have a callback there.
Which
know?
Ends up with Jim, by the way.
That's
which
true.
He tries to say. What is he? I can't remember the exact line, but he's trying to sell the keychain to somebody.
Yeah.
Oh, but yeah, because he wants the teapot back from Dwight.
Oh yeah.
It's got a shamrock on it. Or something.
Yeah. But yeah, so good with Jim and Dwight and
great right back and forth.
And I love
there are plenty of reasons I don't want to be here.
Yeah, oh, there's plenty.
Or that
we get some tragedy in Dwight's life and Moe's more so.
And then it happened with Moe's. Same result or same story, different results. Different ending.
What does she say? Like she's gonna think
the fridge is her father.
Yeah.
Is that what happened to you?
No, I thought my mom was my dad and my wet nurse was my...
My mom. Or, yeah.
My mother, yeah.
My mother. And then eventually we... it's like it figured it out, but Moe's. Same story, different ending.
And I like that Jim admits. He's like, you know, I'm not surprised that Dwight is using my baby to get back at me. I am a little surprised it's working.
Yes. Yes.
There's a lot of, like, owning it happening in this episode, which I really appreciate.
Yeah,
you
they've
know?
Really reached a certain, like, honesty with the whole thing.
Yeah.
Like,
it's a little meta, and I kind of love it.
Yeah,
you know?
I do too. We get a little bit, we get just Pam's voice. She's technically still. Uh-huh.
Even Pam gets more speaking lines in this episode than Creed. What's that about?
I don't know if that's the, that's not really justice.
No.
And then, you know, babies, whatever. who puts their baby in, I don't know. Is that okay? Is that kosher with St. Patrick's Day? Like, I don't know. Just saying that out loud right now is like.
Saying what?
putting your baby in like St. Pat, yay drinking. Like, here's my baby in St. Patrick's Day green with shamrocks and stuff. I don't know. Keep the children away from St. Patrick's Day, right?
Right. That's Meredith's plan. No kids.
Yeah. No kids. Hey, and she followed through, thank God.
Yeah, exactly. Man, but we do have going back to Joe's manipulations, of like double Jim, on the Jim, double speak is so great.
Jim getting back at Dwight.
Oh God, that's such a good moment where
he does get some comeuppance there.
Oh yeah, where Dwight's leaving for his meeting.
Which Jim offers to drop by to offer a strong male presence with his child, and then okay, and then he cuts him right off at the pass.
Yeah, I just want to make, we never do this. Yes,
yep, and just loud enough so Dwight hears the whole damn thing, leaving him to be like, I actually do, and then just like Gabe, just crumbles under her stare.
I will reschedule.
Thank you. And you're like, I'm kind of nervous right
now,
too.
Well, in the extended one, she goes, you know, next time, you don't need to fill me in on stuff that's this level of importance.
Yeah. Wait.
So there was a follow. There was a deleted scene where.
Yeah.
Is it extended?
So Joe's saying that there would actually be a benefit to a system where there's two people in charge, one to handle big picture,
right,
and one to handle day to day,
right.
I thought she said they were going to take care of that or do something about that.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Very interesting. Maybe, do love Michael's reaction, as I was saying before, about her manipulations when she's saying the whole, like, did you feel like you've done enough joke? And as he's leaving the office, he goes, that's super clear-ish. Before he immediately forces the staff to stay.
That's getting tense at that point. They do get up. Okay, what were you going to say?
Yeah, we do get the moment of them trying to leave.
Yeah, and I was trying to see if Creed... I couldn't see Creed trying to... Because of anybody, like, he's the one that's going to just... He's the one that I would say, no, he would be gone.
Yeah.
Like, he wouldn't
but no, he stops, too.
He does stop. Okay.
They both... Angela stops and starts doing something at the desk, and then it's Oscar's behind her, not Creed.
Right.
Yeah. I said,
it's like Creed's kind of off camera if he's there.
Yeah, interesting.
And I imagine, like, okay, he must... whatever.
Yeah.
I don't know.
Yeah.
We learn, at least since... I don't remember what episode where they get locked in, where the fence gets locked. But we do learn that since that episode, we have a new cleaning crew at Dunder Mifflin.
Yes.
Do we ever.
When they show up, that is a radically different group of people.
My fellow Eastern Europeans.
Yeah, they did. They came in. They were ready. Kind of love that they had a little music
bumping,
going.
Yeah.
Like they,
bumping yeah, music
the,
going on.
The, I watched it with the just subtitles on, and the description was just Slavic music plays.
That's great. Gotta love a group that makes the work fun. Though good for them, that's awesome.
And they didn't hesitate, they didn't question.
And then, of course, the moment with Dwight and Joe, where he finally stands up for himself, for his employees, says,
Michael,
thank you. Yeah. What do I say? I keep doing that, huh?
Yeah.
But Michael,
I want Dwight, man.
I love Dwight, great guy, Dwight. Dangerous with guns. Oh, great cut scene of him showing off a gun to Joe.
Yeah,
oh.
This was that Japanese gun I was telling you about.
Oh, she's like, I'm gonna be thinking about that tonight. He's like, me too.
damn it.
Yeah, that's fun one.
I gotta watch that.
Yeah, I was like, where is this from?
Going? That's sort of a somewhat payoff that when later on when Dwight shoots the gun.
Yeah.
And then then she makes fun of him because it's a girl's gun.
Yeah.
So they had a little history of gun appreciation.
A little gun bonding.
Yeah. There was a really good the other deleted moment of note that was when Michael, after Joe had snapped at him.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Oh.
He was trying to go in to talk to her, and Gabe was blocking him from Ken Michael's. You know, trying to do like walking by just to, and then he'd do a quick turnaround and
Gabe's right there.
Yeah.
Right.
Gabe's just like, please stop doing this.
And he finally just like, no.
Yeah. And he goes, I don't understand. Gabe is telling me that there is a problem and the solution is less of me.
That's great.
That Michael cannot fathom that his absence would actually be a solution to a problem.
Quick shout out to the Sabre Corporation with their initiative of printing in all colors.
Print in all colors initiative.
That is such a corporate you know.
It's so good.
And yeah, we get a little hint to Kelly, because Kelly's the most excited about that.
Yep.
So a little future.
Great little plot line for
plot
her.
Line coming. Yeah. Fun little plot. They gave her some fun shit to do.
Which I really love, because it's so much rooted in real, in a real business thing.
Yes.
You know, these kind of like, these ideas that companies have to try and incorporate, you know, employees of color. And I could tell her heart's in the right place.
Yeah.
Right.
But it, in the end, it ends up being just such an example of tokenism. You know?
Yeah.
And and I guess it's better than nothing, but it needs to be a small first step to larger and better initiatives.
Exactly.
That truly show equality and equity to the workforce.
Right. Yeah.
But yeah. You hope it's
D&I, diversity and inclusion groups.
Yeah.
And now it's evolved into the large pushback against any kind of equality or equity. But, you know, hey.
So here we are.
Oof.
Yeah. Oh, God.
That's for another podcast.
Vote your conscience, folks.
Oh, shit.
Please.
Got to talk about the importance of Nature's Viagra, green M&Ms, available for the office on this hallowed of holidays.
Hallowed.
Love that Michael knows the importance of these items and doesn't just see them as candy, because that would be weird. Love that he gets her a piece of coal.
Thank you.
And he makes the bold proclamation that I'm sure a lot of people don't know of, is that buildings in Scranton are literally powered by coal.
Yeah.
Literally.
That's bold, Michael.
You sure about that?
Don't know how that's much different than many other
exactly
places.
Exactly. As opposed to where are they?
Yeah.
Not, you know. So that's stuff.
But hey, you know, he's got a funny sense of humor with his treatment of Joe.
Yeah.
JB, as he might call her.
Well, and yeah,
he does throw that out there. Like, ooh.
I did also like with Daryl. I liked how you're starting to get that the guys in the warehouse are starting to be like, hey, what's up with, did you tuck your shirt in?
Yep.
Oh, I must have done it when I went to the bathroom.
Yeah.
You know?
It's probably some awkwardness for Daryl.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Which we're going to see more of.
He came up to the Nerf world.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Who would have thought back in the Depression episode?
Uh-huh.
And after that sort of tense moment he had with Michael, he kind of looks across and goes like, we're in this, you know.
Which we had a similar moment with Jim a few episodes back.
Yes.
Where they kind of have that look across the
of
office.
Of understanding.
Which is
recognition.
Which is kind of neat.
That's a new aspect of the show that's actually positive, I think.
Yeah.
I would say getting Daryl Moore up in.
Yeah.
You know,
it's very much the print in all colors initiative of The Office, where
they're
finally boosting a prominent character of color, you know. And I guess maybe two, if you consider what's in store for Kelly in the next couple episodes.
Yeah, that's true.
But glad to see Craig Robinson getting some growth in the show. Yeah. He is a fantastic talent.
I love his story on as a whole, like overall the series.
Yeah.
Like, I mean, especially when he goes to like the athlete or whatever, and he's a competent, you know, executive and and really, you know, because, you know, you kind of get this perception of him that he's just bored.
Yeah.
You know, he's not really.
Not challenged.
Yeah.
He's doing.
And that he is one of, I mean, I'd put him up there about with Oscar in terms of characters that are the smartest people. Are the smartest characters
absolutely.
Of the cast.
Yeah, absolutely. Mm-hmm. And in terms of cast, just to go meta on the show for a minute, probably one of the top four talents on
The
Office, you know?
Yeah.
You know, easily.
His musical stuff.
Oh, sure. But even just, you know, his star on Hollywood.
Yeah.
You know, Craig Robinson has been in a ton of movies. You know, he hasn't, I don't know that he's led anything, but he's typically, he's been one of the leads in ensemble casts. You know, he's definitely shown how strong he is as an actor, as a talent, and, you know, easily in a similar realm of Carell, Helms, Krasinski.
Oh, absolutely. You know? Sure.
So
absolutely.
It's good to see the character getting some growth here as well.
Yeah. Yeah, always.
This is such an amazing episode to me, you know, as we get on the home stretch here.
You came around to it, huh?
For all of the struggles of this episode, there's a lot of strengths.
Yeah.
It's very much a season six episode.
It can it's the most, I was just thinking, season six episode.
And it's a late season. You can tell it's these episodes are the ones that are like, we're winding down the season.
Well, if you think about it, it's just like, okay, it's another holiday episode. Not to say that those are all the same, but they all do have certain, like, I don't know.
Certain qualities
certain
that are the
qualities
same.
Of it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
There's
and
no two ways about
doing
it.
They're the season six version of this now.
Yeah. Yeah.
I mean, this doesn't touch, obviously, like, you know, Valentine's Day season two. I mean, that's a Stone Cold classic.
Yeah, absolutely.
So, but I mean, they're still trying.
That's the blood drive.
No, that's Michael Goes to New York. And,
oh yeah,
and,
okay,
and,
yeah,
the Michael Scott joint.
Yeah,
it's no Moroccan Christmas.
No, it's not.
Right,
and, but yeah,
right.
No, we've only got about six or seven episodes left on the season, so we are in the home stretch
we're
here,
rocketing down to.
Yeah,
the end,
and it is a long season, 26 episodes. For
yeah,
season,
we
got to
meet Donna.
But that's what I was saying. I think they're counting. Because there were a couple two-parters
yes.
in this one.
Yeah, we had Delivery and we had Niagara. We're both in this season, of
course. Was there one earlier in the season? No, I guess not.
No. Well, when was the one where him and Pam go on tour? That's a two-parter. That's season five.
Yeah.
Is that
yeah.
season? Okay.
No, it looks like it's just Niagara and Delivery.
Yeah.
So that's what.
Yeah, and they counted those as two, both parts as individual episodes.
Marriage
so,
Baby.
Yeah.
Marriage
yeah.
Baby.
Which, well, still, though, 24 episodes. That's a pretty heavy, you know, I think most of them usually tap out at 22.
Yeah.
Yeah, I don't think it gets too beyond 24 if it does.
This one's, yeah, exactly. Well, 24 if you count the doubles. Yeah, it doubles.
Right.
As,
so,
as singles, yeah.
so, and if you don't, it's 22.
26. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. But either way,
okay.
A few more episodes of season six before we move into season seven, which will, of course, have some big changes for the cast. And
there's a nuclear bomb. Well,
yeah,
not completely, but it's earth shattering.
We're getting there, guys. We got some interesting stuff ahead of us. You know,
we
mentioned Plop and not Gabe.
Donna.
Clark.
Clark. Thank you, Plop and Clark.
Oh,
so
the new guys.
We've got some big changes coming in just two, three seasons. And, of course, we've got a new love interest just around the corner, like you just mentioned, Josh.
Mm-hmm.
So either way, hope you guys will come back and talk about some more episodes with us.
Yeah, please, absolutely.
Absolutely, we will.
All right. I hope all of you will keep listening to the People, Person, Paper podcast. We've been so very happy to have you. I can't even talk. We'll see you next time.
Are you comfortable with that?
The People, Persons, Paper podcast is an OLA Ministries production. The People, Persons, Paper podcast is produced by Hilton Price and Brian Sittler. Engineering by Hilton Price. OLA Ministries is owned and operated by OLA Ministries, LLC. Contact Hilton Price and Michael Zampino for more information.